Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Built Black Podcast.
This is the Dope Black Dads podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison. I feel like I'm hanging out on my own podcast more than I ever have. But basically what happens is I'm extremely busy, which people know, but that's not the important part. I always make time. But what happens is people email me and be like, oh, do you want to have a chat? And I'm like, I do want to have a chat. So then I return for those particular things. And today that has definitely happened. So first and foremost, we did run into each other in Cannes very briefly, didn't we?
Yeah, briefly.
Bro, is Cannes... So basically, if anyone doesn't know, Cannes Lion is a festival of creativity is what they call it. But basically, it's like all the advertising... Major platforms, tons of brands all come together. It's basically a festival of ideas. Mm. Was it what you expected?
My thing is, I didn't have no expectation.
Right. Because I think I saw you just before, right?
Yeah. It was my first time.
And then you were like, I'm actually going out there. And I was like, cool, we need to connect.
Yeah.
But when I thought it was going to be possible to actually just like see people and hang out, spend time and be like, how are you doing? It's good to hear from you. How's everything going? There was no time for that. What actually was your experience of Cannes?
I thought Cannes was like university.
Okay, go on.
I felt like you either choose to go there to study and like what, or you choose to go there and do fun. And I felt like most people went to do fun and only a certain amount of people actually went to do the work part.
Yes. So this is something really interesting. And I was doing a leadership seminar. I won't say the company, but I was doing it for a company that they're one of the major publishers. And one of the guys was like, oh, I'm in charge. I'm like a relationship manager. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. What are the essence of relationship management? And he was just like, well, my job really is to spend time with people and get really close to them and feel comfortable so that when it comes to doing the business, when the things are tough, I'm the person that's able to come in and save the relationship. So most of it is we don't discuss work at all.
Yeah.
Do you subscribe to some of that philosophy as well in terms of some of the best work you've done is just come from people that you vibed with rather than it being professional? Like, how do you distinguish?
100%. I think all of the work we've done has been based off like, I think people liking me and me liking them, or like my business partner, or people just liking Guap in general. I think in most of these companies, we have like an individual within the company who really rides for us or really likes what we're doing. And I think that relationship always helps out when it comes to like pitching back and receiving briefs, etc., etc.
So for anyone who doesn't know, we have Ibrahim Kamara here from Guap. Is it magazine? Because magazine was a term. You're old enough to know this. Let's not like you don't know. It was a piece of paper that was sold on a newspaper stand or in a WH Smith. You're just slightly different to that. I don't see it as print first. Is that correct in that estimation?
When we first started, it was a print magazine, so that's why the magazine came about. But since then, we've grown into like many different things. But funny enough, we're actually bringing our print back. Bringing it back.
Is that like a little bit like, oh, we're doing a feeler capsule? Is it a bit like that, or is it genuinely the primary medium that you feel people want to engage with you at?
I think the magazine for us is our cultural capital. So I think it's what brings in the work. It's what makes people know what Guap's doing. It's It's where we can spotlight the stories that we want to spotlight. So really, it's like the centerpiece of everything we do outside of business. It's more like the thing that gives us the relevance within youth culture.
That's super dope. And then I think like you, it's Guap Media, which is the whole, but what falls under the umbrella? What are all the touch points that you have? And what functions do they play interlocking with each other?
Yeah, so like I said, Guap Magazine is like the centerpiece. So the magazine is our pillar to spotlight creatives, do events under that pillar, and yeah, just do as much as we can for creatives under the magazine. We have the agency where we work with brands who want to tap into the audience that we create with the magazine. So our audience is primarily like young Gen Z / millennial creatives that typically come from diverse communities or diverse backgrounds. So we shoot, we do everything from insights all the way to production, all the way to distribution with our agency. And so that's where we make most of our bread and butter. And then we have things like the Guap Gala, which is an award ceremony for creatives. So that's one pillar. And I think in the future, we're planning to build as many pillars as we can to like uplift the community and uplift creatives worldwide.
That's super dope.
Yeah.
The Guap Gala, is there a silent or spoken confrontation with the GRM Gala? Do you attend the GRM Gala?
No. I haven't attended the GRM Gala. I think, if I'm honest, I think that generation of like creatives.
Say it.
No, just say that. No. There's not even a thing yet. I think when I was coming up, I feel like the only platform that really like supported like the next generation of like media owners was like Jamal Edwards.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
are you from the trio Jamal Edwards? Is that someone you had a relationship with?
Yeah. No. So yeah, I think he defo like supported us on our journey and like just gave advice and that kind of thing. So I had more like a relationship with, or like a synergy with like SBTV and stuff and what they stood for. And I think in terms of competition, no, I think GRM Gala is what it is. Guap Gala is what it is. I think other people have like award ceremonies and stuff. I think just because it has the word gala doesn't mean that they should be put against each other. I think everyone's doing their thing to, yeah, uplift their part of the culture. So I think, yeah, props to what they're doing. But yeah, I just don't think it's we're in the same thing. We're not doing it for the same audience, basically.
So what's really interesting is I think there's definitely an age divide, and it may not even be big. It may be like a 5-10 year gap between ages, but I think in that 10 year gap a lot of things happen. So I'm probably in the 10 year older gap. So GRM SBTV and LinkUp were the platforms,
yeah.
The only places you can go to get anything remotely done,
yeah,
irrespective of what your personal views were, not yours but in general. And then now there's all these amazing generation of creators who have created their own entities. So almost like you're living the dreams that we try to live. And there's so much more diversity in the types of creators that are honored and celebrated and centered now. And then now I meet like people who are under 25 and they kind of make me sick in a good way. They make me sick. It's like, oh, you're free. Just manifest. I can, I am, I will, shall. And in many ways, like I appreciate it because like from my perspective, maybe 2007-08, the kind of like Chipmunk N-Dubs era was like starting, and that was now we're entering the charts. Then we got into the Wretch era and Tiny era, and then that went to another level, and then there was a bit of a gap, and it was like Stylo G was the only one that was on radio, and then it was like another gap, and then you get this new era of like Stormzy, then it went into Dave and, you know, what's in Central C now. But that whole generation, I think music is the best way to kind of chart the timeline of shift, because it's really hard to do it with people because we all permeate differently, like we all mix and match. But in music, there was a particular time that permeates. What it sounds like you're saying is rather than it being a hierarchy of good and better, it's just like a sphere of different parts of blackness
that
engage. How would you articulate your sphere of blackness to something like a GRM, to a something, I'm trying to think of other platforms, you know, radio, what's it called? No, radio. What's it called?
Radar.
My brain's gone dead. Radar, radio, yeah. All these different platforms. How would you say your particular platform sits?
It sits within that. Yeah, I think, first off, yeah, we wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for like the SVs, the Graham Daly, the Link Up, because I think they showcase what platforms coming from our culture can look like. But I guess what was different for us is that we saw those platforms and saw that they were primarily revolved around music, and there wasn't a platform from culture that just covered creativity. So like there wasn't like an ID equivalent or a Dazed equivalent or a Vice equivalent within culture. It was just music. So I think where we came in was covering the other, so covering the stylists, the photographers, the videographers, and putting them on the same pedestal as the music artist. And I think when we was doing it, it wasn't really making sense to everyone at first, but I think like 5 years down the line, this community of creatives is kind of representative of what Gen Z and millennials are. Like, young people are creative. Not everyone wants to be a rapper no more. Not everyone wants to be this or that no more. So I feel like we're one of the only platforms that is like a representation of that part of culture, the part of kids who might come from ends but might want to be a designer, or might come from ends and might want to be a stylist, or just the other. So not just going down music and everything that's in it. So yeah, I think that's where we sit. And that crosses across fashion, and that crosses across arts, and it crosses across music. It kind of like intertwines youth culture a lot more than just the music.
And this just came to mind as you were speaking, but is that evolution connected to an acceptance of different types of masculinity? Yeah. So it's almost like you had to be an MC,
100% footballer,
or a manager.
100%.
Yeah, like it was like five things. Mm-hmm. And now if I say I want to be an actor, no one's going to bat an eyelid. They're going to be like, dope.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that a little bit? The kind of evolution of masculinity in what we call the estate or in the ends? Or
yeah, I think we say this all the time, that for us growing up, you was either a footballer or a rapper, what your mum told you to do or your dad told you to do, or like roadmen. Like those are like the things that were like seen as like success in all the different parts of our things. And I think we got to a point at university where we realized the only reason why everyone wants to kind of be like that, because those are the only things that are like platformed properly. So that even that was like a reason for us to like start the platform, to really like showcase people, to people that you can be from the areas that we're from and still do other things and still be successful and like still be an entrepreneur and look how you look and dress how you want, etc., etc. And I think, yeah, it does touch on masculinity, because I think, like I said, we are told and our environment show us only one way out when we was growing up. So I think now there's many examples of ways you can be out. So I think it's going to help a lot of young men think of other ways they can make money and other ways they can get out of the hood, because there's so many examples of people who have come from the same similar backgrounds that have done the same thing, where I don't think that was the same before.
Yeah. The other thing that I think has happened is with women being more centered. So historically, I don't know if you know, I used to run a show called Sunday Show.
Mm-hmm. And at that show,
was my show. And for so long, it felt very clear that there was a glass ceiling in terms of what women could do in the industry. And most of them were either like models, assistants to a man, talent obviously themselves, but very rarely was it like, I own a business. Like I think of someone like Shawnee Caballero, who's like this amazing publisher. And I follow her just because I enjoy the clarity, confidence and real experience that she has of doing stuff. Like I just love hearing it, and I like to be immersed in it as a constant reminder, because in my era, most of that wasn't really possible. She probably would, someone would have tried to make her a model or something and been like, yeah, be a model. And that's the ceiling. So I think the raising of women, the diversification of masculinity has then meant you can really do whatever you want. 100%. Like being a male fashion designer, a heterosexual male fashion designer is just, of course, go on. You should do that.
Yeah, yeah.
When you think about yourself and just who you are, how would you characterize your personality? That's one thing. Like I've obviously experienced you a couple of times. I've seen tons of your work.
Uh-huh.
But the root cause of like who you are and how you become this person, do you understand that story and that experience? Have you ever told it?
Yeah, yeah. I've told it like recently within like the last year. There was a podcast I'd done and I told it. I think that was like the first time I kind of like actually like went through a chronological timeline, and it even made me think about, oh, you know what, this actually makes sense why I am. So yeah, if I was to describe myself, I would say I'm chilled. I would say I'm a hard worker. I would say I listen more than I speak.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say I'm a nice person. And I would say I'm dedicated. Probably, yeah.
So I heard this thing where they said nice people are either nice because things have happened to them and that's how they want to be treated. So like they've just experienced lots of heavy things and they've witnessed it, and so they want to be the exact opposite of that. And the other thing is that, well, I think, and this is maybe not a bit of a narrative, but just you're nice as a mask to who, what you truly feel. Have you ever unplucked your what nice means to you and why you are that way? Because I recently have had to acknowledge why I do what I do, and it's not fun, but it's been important.
I think life is simple, isn't it? Like, that's how my perception to life is simple. Is like, if you want something, go get it. If you don't want something, don't do it. If you want to be a bad person, be a bad person. Like, it's very black and my mind, the way my mind works is very black and white. So I don't like stress. So I don't want to do things outwardly that's going to cause me any sort of headache or stress. So I think, to me, being a nice person isn't going to lead me to anything negative. So, yeah, like, and maybe there is like a deeper root. I don't think, a lot of bad things have happened to me, but I think to me, everything is what it is, isn't it? Like, it's just life. So, yeah, I think for me, being nice should be a norm. I don't think it should be you're so sick because you're nice, or like you should be nice. Like, I think it's an effort to not be a nice person.
I hear you. I agree. I think my desire to be nice is because I've witnessed a lot of oppression, specifically to women, some gay people that were in my family that I knew growing up, and like in part of me engaged in some of it, like just like mild homophobia, not really understanding the magnitude of what it is that I'm saying. And then I think about who those people really were. Most of the people I quite liked, they were really nice people, and I felt like the conditions for them to be who they are didn't really exist as they do today. And so what became of them, or what they had to go through, I think about. So creating conditions specifically for women, it's because I've witnessed so many women be attacked, be abused, be brutalized, marginalized. So it becomes a thing of like, I don't want women to be around me and feel like they can't say what they think, or that they're just tools for, you know, my growth or whatever. So that's really important to me. I also think being neurodivergent has given me a completely different experience. That's a new thing for me. I didn't realize I was until 18 months ago. So imagine literally living 37 and a half years and then one day discovering that you're ADHD and being like, oh, whoa, hold on. This is a whole, like, it basically colors your whole experience. Everything that's ever happened to you,
makes sense.
You understand, because the foundation of it is just like, that's what I was working from without knowing.
Uh-huh.
And so I feel that that is a reason why, for me, I build so much empathy, because I've realized how much difference there is in some men that fundamentally shape their outlook. Like, I wouldn't be able to just, I can't oppress in the way that some patriarchal men can. I can't just be that person. There's like a glow inside that warms up whenever I'm being an arsehole. So it immediately tells me to wrap it up.
Okay.
Like, it's just like an internal built system. And so I feel I want to create an environment where more men who are like me or who are similar in values can express themselves, can explore, can be curious and discover who they actually are, because that type of masculinity doesn't work for everyone. Mm-hmm. Is that, I almost feel like you're a different breed of man anyway. Have you ever thought about your positioning in masculinity versus sort of the red pill man or the archetype or the men that often get challenged?
Haven't thought about it, but I do know that I probably sit somewhere in the middle, because I feel like even things like me having a nose piercing is like something that a red pill man probably wouldn't do, kind of thing. And then I think over time, the things that people say about like men not being able to speak, etc., or not being able to communicate, I've actually tried to go deeper into like understanding that. And where earlier on I said, I listen more than I speak, I feel like that is communication. Because I think a lot of times people talk about communication and just think it's outwardly. But I think a big part of communication is listening and actually understanding what someone else is saying. And I think that part is always ignored. So I think when I think about how my masculinity is grown, before I probably would have spoken more than I listened and tried to prove a point and tried to be like, oh no, like I'm right kind of thing, where now I don't. So yeah, I think I do feel like I have elements of a traditional man, but then I think because of experiences and like where the world is going, but then also that, yeah, like the type of industry I'm in, there are elements where it's like I've had to learn from my environment, and it's kind of put me in the middle, I would say.
I think Jay-Z said something that y'all fronting like Tupac didn't have a nose ring too or something. Like, that's so many thug men's icon. Yeah, but he also had one, and he was laying in a tub naked with gold all over him.
Yeah.
You know, in many, many ways, I don't know how like true that picture is. And I feel like sometimes, you know, men have been more nuanced and diverse from the beginning, and we just pretend that part of us doesn't exist.
Even like when men like start perms and stuff.
Yeah, just like how can you have a perm, call yourself a pimp and a gangster, carry a gun, shoot people, hit women, and then have a perm and then be like, bro, the math is a math thing.
Literally.
So how you were also a father. How many children do you have?
One.
How old are they?
Three.
Boy, girl?
Boy, Ezra.
Three.
Yeah.
So listen, 3 years old, I'm gonna give you this is the only parenting code I'm gonna give you. Okay, because I don't think it's fair to give people parenting advice and information, because it's like you're going through your own thing in your own way.
Yeah.
Too many unknown variables. But 3 to 7 is gangbusters, especially for dads. It's when we really, really kick in. Like, we kick in early because you can spend time, you can do, you know, connection, like bonding, skin to skin, going for walks, feeding, change. You do all those things. Those are more practical elements of fatherhood and they're important. But I feel like the best of a dad is in the action.
Yeah.
Men doing. There's something powerful when you get to teach him little stuff, and then he starts to pick up on those things and then turn it into his own.
Yeah.
So even if it's like, oh, like the other day I told my kids to film me doing some stuff, and my son was doing different. I was looking at him like, how are you better than me at this? Like, he's just like, wait 1 second, dad. And he's like, no, stand there. And he's like, he's mini directing me, and I'm not creative in that way, but like to see him interpret the things that I do in his own way, and that gasses me up. Then I want to give him everything.
Yeah.
What's been your experience of 0 to 3 as a father? How have you found it?
I'm gonna lie, for me it's been amazing. If only my situation is quite different, because my son is with me every week, Thursday to Sunday. But and it's been like that since he was born. So like he actually came to my house first before he actually went to his mum's house. So like I've actually been bonding with him since he was zero. So like it hasn't been a thing where I haven't been able to like actually build a proper rapport with him. Like I've had him, like I said, every week, Thursday to Sunday. So it's been fun. I think it's been so interesting. And I think that also changed my perspective on a lot of things. Because I think seeing someone grow and seeing someone go from like not knowing nothing to like knowing a little bit more kind of thing, and actually seeing how they're developing like week on week, it's just like it's like a very fascinating process to watch. And so for me it's actually been all good. Like my son's not one of those, my son's not a noisy child either kind of thing, so he's been quite relaxed and he's quite independent. So yeah, it's been fun. Like I actually have enough, like there's not one part of it that I would change, and I'm happy that I've had that finger place of Thursday to Sunday every week, because I feel like there would have been elements that I would miss out on if it wasn't that way.
So I think one of the things on this podcast is I think family dynamics are important. Like I'm a big fan of like, for example, an intentional blended family than an accidental breakup and fracture. So as in, like, imagine you're with your partner and you've done 10 years and it's just not working. To sit there and take time to invest time in deconstructing your relationship in a way that allows there to be harmony and a life after that point is more important than scrapping and fighting for your relationship to the very end. So family dynamics are just important because everyone has a slightly different arrangement, and it's always good the lessons that people learn from each other. How does your family dynamic work? How does your...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Extended family play a role in helping you looking after, who's your support system in you looking after your children, especially in those 4 days when he's with you?
Yeah, so I would say it takes a village to raise a child, isn't it? Like my mum, my sister, I have like two sisters and a little brother who live with my mum. So when there's times I might need to do something, he spends a lot of time there. So I think he stays there between my house, their house, and his mom's house. And yeah, I think he kind of feels like a little brother because my mom has six kids. When he came, he kind of just felt like another one of us. It's never a case of, I have to ask for someone to babysit. If he's in the house,
he just blends into the crew.
If he's in the house, he's in the house. Like, and there would never be a point where any of my siblings would be like, oh, I don't want to look after him, or why are you always leaving him? Like, it would never be that because he is one of us kind of thing. So I work from home Thursday and Friday anyway. So Thursday and Friday, I pick him up from nursery, take him to school the next day, pick him up. But then from the weekend, he'll either spend time with me or spend time with my family. But yeah, he's just integrated. And because it's, like I said, because he's been there from the start in regards to, he came to our house first, because I had to take him from the hospital. And we've always had that arrangement of him Thursday to Sunday. Like, the whole family see him grow.
Bro, tell us, how did you get, because so what, like, for me, I don't have those challenges, and sometimes I get into a very lofty, like, it's very easy to create those dynamics, because me and the mother of my children, we do 1 week, 1 week off. But at any point during that week, we just hang out. It's just like, what are you doing? You're free? I'm gonna come around for dinner, or do you wanna come? Like, we just try to make it as normal as possible. But how did you come to the arrangement of, like, I'm just gonna do these 4 days, and I'm going to take him Thursday to Sunday and maintain it? And, like, is there communication and a healthy dialogue with the mother of your children? Or,
I think I set that foundation before he was born. So I think before he was born, we had a communication and a conversation, and I said, that's what I want, because I didn't want him growing up, I'm Sierra Leonean. One, not knowing he's Sierra Leonean. And then two, not growing up around my family as well. Like, that was very, that was something I wasn't debating. And I also didn't want him ever thinking, oh yeah, I only see my dad on the weekends. Like, that was never going to be the case. I think in regards to how I managed to do it, literally, I set the foundation way before he was born, so that when he was born, there was no, like, debating about it. Like, we've already had a conversation about how we're gonna make the situation work. So yeah, that's how we've done it. And then in terms of keeping it up, like I said, I work Thursday and Friday at home, the whole team does. So the days, and I have him from Thursday to Sunday, so the days that I'm working from home, it just makes it easier, because even if he's off, he can just spend time with me. I've even bought, like, a house near his school and stuff, just to make things, like, easier and stuff. So yeah, just like intentional decisions and intentional conversations and everything for the best of my son.
Yeah. If you were going to design him, because he's going to be a man of the future, and I think about this at my son's 7. No, he's actually 8 very soon. But I'm almost building an intentional man of the future. What are some of the things that you're trying to plug into him so that he understands from early?
One of the things I would say is that for him to understand that his dad loves him. I think, like, intentionally, like, letting him know I love him. But I think a lot of us from our generation probably didn't even actually hear that from our dad. Like, in actual words, through action, probably. So actually letting him know that. I think independence. I'm the type of dad, like, if he falls down, I probably won't help him up all the time. I kind of would, like, let him get up himself. That he is able to do anything. I hope that through the work I've done and through his, like, work ethic that he will get, that he can believe that anything's possible, and that I also can help in with, like, black nepotism, hopefully, to like help him get where he wants to be. And I think those are the main things. I feel like I don't want to tell him what he has to be. I kind of just want him to, I want to do as much as I can for him to, like, find what he wants to do, and then I just use all the resources I have to make it happen.
And then for you, in terms of, like, being from Sierra Leone, what kind of cultural things are that happen? I just came back from Antigua. So my family are Jamaican. So on my dad's side, all Jamaican. On my mum's side, all Jamaican. But my maternal grandfather is Antiguan. So my grandmother married 2 Antiguan men in her life. And within that, going to Antigua, so I've been to Jamaica tons of times. I finally go to Jamaica and then I understand my grandmother immediately. Like, it was really bizarre that she adopted so much Antiguan cultural elements, like food, language, ways of expression. And so, and even the sound, her sound had augmented from how she sounded originally. And it's kind of like, I can hear some of the Antiguan influences in it. But food is probably the biggest one by far. Like, how she cooked is different. What are some of the key Sierra Leonean cultural elements of either family makeup, you know, language or food that are really important that you want to transfer into your children, but also people on the podcast should understand? No disrespect, but Sierra Leone's not a part of the top five diaspora countries. So I'm just saying.
That's crazy. Those who know, you know, I don't even need to talk too much, you know. Those who know, innit? Like I always say, yeah, when something is not, not even just me, it's economics. When something is highly available, the value goes down.
Oh, okay, all right, that's fine talk. Cool, yeah, man, isn't
it? I just said, it's just economics. I didn't make the rules.
Very quickly though, I do feel like that's an I've never really actually thought about it. I just said it. But then now I'm thinking Jamaica's number one in terms of
Jamaica's number one.
In terms of per capita cultural impact. There's 3 million people there. And how much impact Jamaica has had globally, per capita, by far number one. Then Nigeria, then Ghana, then I would say South Africa. I actually don't know who the fifth is. I would say Trinidad is on the list because carnival culture is huge. Their food, their language is huge. I wouldn't even say Kenya. I don't think Kenya's culture is like that.
I think it's a debate between Nigeria and Jamaica, though.
No. Not per capita.
I will lie.
No way.
I think this is the clip you should put out and ask.
No, listen.
I think there's actually debatable.
How? There's 3 million people in Jamaica. Listen, there's 230 million Nigerians.
Bro, you're Jamaican, isn't it? So I'm from a point of view. It's debatable. It's debatable.
Do you have one argument about the export of Nigerian culture that even comes close to reggae, jerk chicken, Bob Marley, Usain Bolt, like what we've created from 3 million people?
I feel that feels
Afrobeat. Because for me, reggae and Bashman have been doing it for longer.
Than Afrobeat.
Yes, it's a global export.
Mm.
Bob Marley's traveled further than Fela Kuti for sure.
It's debatable. You should put it out.
Okay, all right. Don't you know what? This is going on the internet. One of us is going to get cancelled. Hopefully it's you, because I have things that I want to protect.
It's debatable. Like, that's me. I don't have a side because I'm not Nigerian or Jamaican. It's debatable. It could be.
All right. If you are culturally selling, let's say you're at an expo and you're selling Sierra Leone to the diaspora, to whoever, about just like you should visit, you should invest, you should, you know, pay attention to. What is the conversation in Sierra Leone that people need to know? We know diamonds, but beyond that.
Idris Elba.
That's cheating, bro. You went to the greatest black export of all time from Britain. Like, people love that guy in such a way.
It just sounds
like I want to reject that. A part of me, because he also speaks patois. You need to check, bro, because I swear he's like 10% Jamaican or something.
I saw him in Sierra Leone. Like, he's definitely Sierra Leonean. What's the best thing for Sierra Leone? I feel there's not a lot. If we're talking from the UK point of view, there's not a lot of Sierra Leoneans. But the ones that are in the industry are extremely talented.
Do you know what? I feel like you should make it need to do a piece on Sierra Leoneans who are doing dope things.
Yeah, I can list it. We've got Ib Kamara, who's creative director of LV right now. Wait, LV?
I thought you were talking about yourself. I was looking at you like, that's the most gas thing I've ever seen in my life.
No.
Yeah, I know who that is though.
Chief of Days, yeah.
Yeah.
Harry Panera.
Yeah.
Idris Elba. We've got Big Zoo. Got Henry, the presenter. Got myself. We've got Labrum.
Who? Labrum. Oh, yeah.
Labrum. Yeah. Pode from Labrum. We've got Sampa.
Okay, that's a pretty good one.
That's a bad one. We've got... Even that list is crazy.
No, you got to do a Sierra Leonean doing shit dinner, because I saw a Ugandan one, and it was slightly Brezzy. I was like, ooh, they may be coming for you. I would say whatever position we find, your competition is Uganda.
What are you talking about?
Trinidad,
no.
Uganda,
Trinidad. You could have named me one person from Trinidad in the scene.
What do you mean? Culturally, though.
Yeah.
They export carnival, which is a global phenomenon. Global. Soca, global. Come on. Specific music from their island has gone global.
No, it's true.
So I feel like that's your conversation. And I think you should all battle it out and then send an email to jamaica.com. And we'll see if you make it into the top five. But I'm just saying, for me, like, I spent, like, obviously when people say, oh, I've traveled to Africa, oh, that's stupid, because specific countries are so different across the continent. But I've had the privilege of being in Caribbean and countries in Africa. And it's just a different world view.
Yeah.
Like, I really do feel like I'm in the wrong place. Like, I knew I was in the wrong place. And then I visited, like, Antigua, Jamaica. And like, even when you go Dom Rep, there's just something. There's something in the air. The sun is different. The soil is different. The food is different. The voice, the language that people use and the tone that they have resonates. I don't know if you know this thing of like when you're on the phone to a black person, you know it's a black person.
Yeah.
Even if like you're calling, there's a vibration that we have between us, which is prominent. So when you go back, when I go to South Africa often, I never want to leave. Like, I feel like there's a home element to it. And I feel like we need to understand the other countries outside of the three that we all kind of got shipped from.
Yeah.
Like, what are some of the other countries and what their things are to go and investigate? Because I think there's great things there to go and unpack. And there's also space for us to go and, like, invest and upskill and, you know, get involved in what things are going locally. Have you ever thought about investing in Sierra Leone? Would you do it?
Yeah, no, I did. So my dad was building a house there. And then I basically helped him like refurbish it, but then he passed away before it like finished. So it's still there. It's still to be complete. So I am investing there. I just need to finish it.
Yeah. That's powerful, man.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the relationship with your dad and kind of just like it not being as straightforward. What was the relationship with your dad? Because most of the time I didn't grow up with my dad day to day. He wasn't active or present at all. But the things I kind of learned were from his absence, quite powerfully, but in a useful way. Like, there's just things that I just didn't need to be exposed to. And I think sometimes it's a better environment if a parent isn't healthy mentally to be able to have a positive impact.
Yeah.
Their absence may be the best thing. What was your actual relationship with your dad like?
Oh, no, you know, my relationship was good. I think as he was passing, it got better as well. I think, my dad's always been present, but he was always there. But then he split up with my mum when I was like 11 or 12, but he still made an effort to kind of like be in our lives kind of thing. I think you learn good things, you learn bad things. I think as I've got older, I feel like there's a lot of my character and where I am that I can actually see comes from how he was as well and how he maneuvered, but then there's also things he done that also shapes some of the things that I do, like some of the negative things. I think all in all it was a good relationship. I think, like I said, as I started becoming a man, it became a better relationship because we could speak man to man, I would say.
Cool. What are some of the do you have life questions that you haven't got to say what the answers or the backstory are, but like, do you have big life questions that you want, need, or hope for answers for?
Not to get a bit deep, but I think I often question if I'm happy. Because I think in my position, like, most of the things that I would want, I have. Like, I don't actually have any, like, worries. On paper, like, everything that someone would want, I've basically got, kind of thing. But then I think yeah, there's just, I don't know if that makes me happy. That makes sense. So yeah, I think I often question that.
So what you just said is really interesting, because I feel like I've been doing stuff since 13. I've been working since 13. I was that little kid on the estate who used to have a car washing business, and I gathered all the other people on the estate and we used to knock on doors and wash cars for £5. I was doing that from 13 years old.
Yeah.
And then I've had a job since 16, and independent since 19. And at 39, I'm tired.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even really about anything else or anyone else. I think I'm just tired. And I don't even think I'm tired as in like I don't like what I do, is that I would like to preserve all my energy for things that are peace-led or joy-led.
Yeah.
And anything in between, any passa, any like weird behavior, any scandal, anything just challenging, I don't particularly desire, and I will create a boundary, a very strong one, about engaging in it. Just because I think at this stage, I feel I deserve peace and joy. Like that's what I want to laugh like my 8-year-old self, and I want to rest, and I want to sit in nature, and I want to be around loved ones, and I want to hear how their day is going. I don't want to hear about conspiracy theories and like every day just like a problem, or you know, self-inflicted things that people need to go through on their own. I don't know how you find peace in what you do. Like once you become of use to people in a culture, I assume most people are trying to extract value and access and platform, and I deserve to be on a front cover because, and if you don't, you don't care about black people, or you know, you must get all of that. How do you deal with all of those side of things?
Well, I don't go out much because I think
is that in general, or is that because of the position you hold now?
I think both. I think I could go somewhere that's meant to be like fun, and then it becomes work. So it gets kind of long. How do I do it? I probably don't, if I'm being honest. I probably don't. I'm probably still working on it.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Look, I feel, and I think, I don't know how much years we are apart.
I'm 29.
Yeah, so we're 10 years apart.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I was doing 29 again, there are so many things that I would say would be of incredible value to know now. And it sounds like some of the things you've already got in place, which is fantastic. But we're going to say these just for the audience as well as for you. And one of the main things is just boundaries, which it sounds like you have. So by removing yourself, you create a boundary. But you've got to be mindful that you don't become a tower in the tower by yourself. Because that's also really, I know you have a business partner who's super dope. We even get to speak about him yet. And you've got a great team around you. But you can end up being in a tower because it's so peaceful up there that you just lose that day-to-day connection to what people are doing on the ground every day, what their needs are, and how what you do can add value. And so the best way to do it is boundaries. So how I visualize it to myself that makes sense is I visit those realms. Like I when I have enough capacity, as in like I've recharged enough, I'll make a mental note and I'll make a visit to the chaos and try to connect with the right types of people, leave the right types of sentiment and vibe in the space, and then go back to my space and protect it. And I feel like that particular approach has helped me in the last 3-4 years from burning out. I used to burn out every year. It was just like, I expect anywhere between September and December, my brain stops working and I need to lay on my back for hours. So that's one thing. And I think secondly is just really protecting your private life, as in like the people who are in your actual life day to day, the family you came from, the family you've created. Like that is a separate world, and not turning that into a workspace. Because I think one of the things that I also, and I still kind of try and do it now, is I kind of work with everybody. Like because of what I do, there's room for whatever someone, if I meet someone and they're a designer or a videographer or any one of those, come and join. And there's never any demarcation. So it means that when I need to be switched off, I need to be treated as a human being, I actually have a space to retreat to where I'm just Marvin. Yeah. I'm not Marvin Harrison that can. I'm just Marvin. And they're like, you know, ribbing me about what I did when I was 8. And they're, you know, laugh at me as well as appreciate what I can do.
Yeah.
Those two things I think are by far the most. And I've never left therapy. I've stayed in it. There's points where I don't go, but I've never left. I've always kept some sort of contact. And I think every time I find myself stuck, they get the depth of challenge. And I preserve it from other spaces to keep that space neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And so those three things are by far, as a man about to hit 40, the things that I wish I knew 10 years ago that I think would have given me more peace and more discipline. And hopefully other people at home or even yourself can take something away from that.
Definitely. Good advice.
Cool, man. Well, look, thank you so much for joining. Can you quickly tell me about your business partner? I think he's brilliant. I think the fact that you're a duo, how did you meet him? How did you come about? How did you work together? How have you not killed each other? Will you please be one of those platforms that actually make it and the relationship lasts 25, 30 years? Because it's very, very easy to fracture because it happens all the time.
Yeah, no, we went to the same college and then went to the same university. So we've been friends for quite some time. And then when it came to business, we actually started Guap with like a few people. But we were the only ones that like really cared about it. So we got closer through that. And then in regards to how we haven't argued and stuff, we've always said we're always going to do what's best for Guap rather than what's best for ourselves. So whenever we've had any sort of like disagreement or anything, what's best for Guap usually can be found.
It's a North Star.
Yeah, so like once we've put both sides, what's best for Guap is usually found in that. So we'll always go with what's best for Guap, regardless of who it's come from. And I think that's kind of, that foundation's always kept us on the same page.
One last thing is just like, and this is something that I'm trying to find a way, a vehicle to tackle the conversation in a healthy way. Is I feel is in like in relationships, it doesn't necessarily matter between the gender, but in relationships, you're trying to find a way of working with your partner. How do you approach dating based on everything we discussed around masculinity, the fact that you have a child, the fact that you work very intensely? What role does love play? What role does relationships play? How do you attract, maintain any advice into the ether for the rest of the world? Because I feel like there's a lot of people who are desperately struggling.
How do I attract? I'm panging it. No, I'm joking.
Don't say it. Say it.
Nah, but in terms of maintaining, I think you make time for what you want to make time for, innit? I think the same way you can like schedule meetings and stuff, you can therefore schedule in times, like spend times with your partner or people you're dating, etc., etc. Love, I think it does play a part. I think it kind of goes back to what you were talking about in regards to like spaces where you are just Marvin or spaces where you're just Ibrahim, about Ibrahim, everything that comes with Ibrahim. I think, yeah, love can help diffuse that or give you a space where it's like away from all of that and the comfort and the peace that you need that you can't usually get outside. What else? I mean, no, I would say that I would keep it short. I mean, that's another thing about me. I try not to just say things for saying sake. So I don't want to just say things for saying. I think I'll just keep it as those.
Powerful. Ibrahim Kamara, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming down. It's great to actually finally get to
catch up,
do extensive time with you. Yeah, for real. We'll do the unofficial one day as well, where we get to say more things that won't be publicized. I appreciate you and the platform that you have and the approach to the platform also. What I will very quickly and importantly tell you is that holding the space that you do reminds me in a way of like what Kanye West did to rap, where he stood in the middle of it and did it differently. He would wear a pink polo and cared about designers and had a backpack and whatever. And that's the only significance and transferable element to it. But standing in the middle of the thing with the different perspective really creates capacity and space, but also understanding for other people who are like you and from the fruits of the tree. Jamal Edwards I was very fortunate to be involved in SBTV right at the beginning. And as an incredible human being, he left an indelible mark on my heart and on how I see life and how I see business. And so to hear that you're fruit of that tree as well really brings me a lot of joy. So thank you for all the great work you're doing. If you ever need anything I'm connected to is open to you. But yes, congratulations on everything, Mike.
No, thank you so much.
No worries, King.
Dope Black Podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.